WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest is theater critic and producer Robert Brustein. He's worked in various aspects of the theater as an actor, director, producer, teacher, and critic. He founded the American Repertory Theater, now housed at Harvard University, and was the dean of the Yale Drama School, where he formed the Yale Repertory Theater. He's been writing about theater for the New Republic since 1959. He's collected some of his essays and reviews in a new book called Who Needs Theater? In it, he discusses topics ranging from theater history to regional theater, the British invasion, contemporary playwrights, and Broadway. I asked him about the state of American theater criticism today.
Criticism is always meant to be interpretive, supportive or non-supportive, as the case may be, but right now it seems to have turned into a kind of consumer's guide in New York, where critics tell the public whether they should spend their money or not. And as a result, it's not doing people in the theater any good. And in the long run, it's really not doing the public any good.
A lot of theater reviews end up closing the performance if it's a bad review. Is there a way, do you think, to write a critical review yet to not close down a performance if you think the show is bad?
I think there's one very significant way, which is not to write for the New York Times. I mean, I was once offered that job, and I turned it down simply because I could not see myself as someone responsible for the employment or unemployment of large numbers of people who had put a great deal of time, effort, and artistry into creating a work. But in my more out-of-the-way post on the New Republic, I don't affect the run of a play, so I have the luxury, a luxury not enjoyed by my friend on the New York Times, I'm afraid, of just talking about the nature of the play and how it fits into the nature of other plays and possibly even theater history. It's a more reflective kind of criticism than the hot day-after kind of criticism, judgmental criticism, is permitted to do.
So you want to write for a periodical that doesn't affect the box office?
I choose that purposely, and I try to proselytize among my own colleagues and fellow artists for refusing celebrity. That celebrity seems to me one of the most dire and malignant qualities of American life on the American artist.
Why do you think becoming a celebrity is such a dangerous thing?
Because you keep trying to repeat the conditions that made you a celebrity instead of repeating the conditions that made you an artist. And as a result, you tend to either repeat your past successes or to get more and more in the form of novelty, creating more and more novelty in order to capture the attention you once had. So you're not really looking at the thing itself, which is the object, the art object. You're looking at all the conditions around the art object, namely your place in cultural society.
Your critics have described you as being anti-Broadway.
As far as being anti-Broadway is concerned, I really am. I won't accept that appellation because there are things I've seen on Broadway that fill me with great exaltation. They don't happen very often, but they do happen from time to time. I think you might say I am anti the Broadway system, which I don't think has proved, and what's happened on Broadway in recent years is confirmation of my point, has proved to be a very good breeding grounds for talent. I think it's a killing grounds for talent. And a lot of very good people have left the theater, unfortunately, and gone into films and television where they can be safer and more secure and more shielded, as it were, from the killing conditions of Broadway.
Do you think the future of American theater is in regional theater? And I should say here, you hate the expression regional theater. You prefer nonprofit resident theater.
I think the word regional implies a certain provincialism, whereas the resident theaters actually are far from provincial. While they create their programs for their audiences, as you know, a large number of the things they've done have gone on to other venues. My own theater, for example, travels extensively nationally and internationally to all the festivals. So I don't like the word regional for that reason. I don't like the word tributary theater either, because, or the phrase tributary theater, because it seems to imply that the resident theater organizes its work in some backwater in order to float down the river towards Broadway. And that's not its purpose, or I'm afraid it's sometimes it is its purpose, and that shocks me and upsets me.
Let's get to some of your opinions, opinions that you've given in reviews that you've written in The New Republic. You called Children of a Lesser God, which was very successful on Broadway and then became a very successful film, you called it the play you're not allowed to hate. Why not?
Well, I saw it as a kind of subgenre of a large number of plays, which formulate themselves in such a way that criticism is, as it were, baffled before it, and the public feels required to applaud it, even though they may feel in their hearts that it's a pretty rotten play. And because it has to, it deals with certain important and necessary issues of the time. The way it deals with those issues, quite often, is banal and sentimental and soporific. It's very hard for criticism to criticize the major issue when it's dealing with the individual issue, which is the play itself and how effectively it it's confronting these problems.
So you could be accused of being heartless for not liking a show like that.
Exactly, and I often have to represent myself as heartless because I don't like a lot of those shows.
Do you think there's a parallel that can be made between made-for-TV movies and Broadway in the sense that they're really involved in message stories now, stories with a message?
I think a lot of our theater does tend to fall into that dump, and it's most easily available, I think, to the audience. And people like to go away from the theater feeling good about themselves and good about their attitude towards whatever the inferior form of being on the stage they've watched. But it is a form of condescension. I remember even as good a play as Nicholas Nickleby ends up with this incredibly self-righteous parade in which the audience goes away feeling that they have somehow participated in some magnificent affirmation of benevolence, and then they walk out of the theater right past people sitting in doorways with their heads down, drugged out. They do nothing about them. They do nothing about the problems of black inequality. They do nothing about discrimination towards homosexuals. It's just a question of feeling good in the theater.
When you went to see Laurie Anderson's New Wave multimedia show, it led you to think about the new marriage between modernism and the media. Would you describe the marriage that you were thinking of?
I think in order to sell newspapers and magazines that it's imperative for critics and cultural commentators to identify new geniuses every week. And quite often they are identifying very talented people, but it seems to be one of the problems of our culture that the only two stories worth writing about are success and failure. So after you've identified the success, you turn around and announce the failure and look for the next genius. And this does not allow any talent, really, the opportunity to develop in peace and quiet the way talent has always developed in the past.
So you think artists profit in the short run by lots of media attention, but in the long run, they might lose out?
I think in the short run they lose out too. I don't know what good it does them except to solve their vanity and their egos, but it doesn't help with the development of their art.
One last thing. You've described yourself as wanting to write criticism that puts the theater into some kind of context instead of just being a consumer's guide. This is good, spend your money. This is bad, don't go. Have you ever gotten reviews of your productions that you felt you really learned from?
Yes, I have. I must say it's rare. But I have had reviews of that kind, and I cherish them. But for the most part, as Jan Kott once said, you know, someone reviews a play, and you don't know about the reviewer, you don't know where he stands on sexual issues, political issues. You don't know anything about the person. They're sitting there in some removed height, simply judging things without giving you any of their credentials. In most cases, they don't have credentials for criticism. They just have an opinion. And one of the strongest things, one of the strongest points I try to make in the book is that opinions in regard to artistic objects are virtually worthless. That if the opinion does not come out of a profound conviction, whether it's a social or political or metaphysical or religious conviction about where that play sits in the larger order of the universe, then this criticism is going to be very disposable and is very disposable.
Robert Brustein, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Robert Brustein's new collection of essays and reviews is called Who Needs Theater, and it's published by Atlantic Monthly Press.